This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, this is an election year in the United Kingdom. It is actually probably in Ireland, but they might hang on until next March here. Certainly, the European elections this summer will also throw up some very interesting results. Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister of Britain, has said he expects to go to the country in the second half of this year. But whatever he decides to do, the polls are insisting that it won't work. And one poll last week suggested that the Tories would only return with 100 seats, which is extraordinary. It would mean Labour would be coming back with over 400 seats, and that would be historical. To discuss what's happening in Britain, we're joined now by Chris Johns. Chris, former chief economist with the Bank of Ireland, and now a very respected commentator, and of course, based in London. Chris, it appears from the polls, and one poll in particular, that the Tories could, the number of seats could go down to 100. Now, this for two centuries has been the greatest election winning operation, the Tory party in history, in democratic history. It really is crumbling around them. And I had a thought, Chris, watching two things that spring to mind. The boat race last week, when nine of the Oxford crew went down sick because the Thames was full of stuff that shouldn't be in a water system. And also this incredible scandal around the post office in Britain. That if we see things like that, both the water companies privatised, the railway companies privatised, and the post office also privatized in a way, that this is a moment in Britain when something is ending. And what I think it might be, or I wonder what you think, is more important. Margaret Thatcher became Prime Minister in 1979, and she engaged in a revolution, which she really completed. Modern politicians tend to talk about revolutions and then do nothing when they get into office. She did things, Chris, but this isn't turning out great for the Tory party or indeed for Britain.
No, one of the things that she did, of course, was privatisation. This was one of the key, if not the key, policy platform that, there were lots of bits of Thatcherism. Breaking the unions was another big part of it. The fight that she picked in particular with the coal miners, everybody of a certain age will remember. But the reference that you made there to the what's floating around in the Thames these days speaks to one particular aspect of her policy platform, and that was privatization. All of the water utilities, including Thames Water, the company responsible for the River Thames, were privatized back in the day. And we look at it now as botched privatization. A lot of people at the time said that this was being done in a cack-handed way, and that all sorts of things would happen after it. And a lot of those criticisms have come home to roost. What happened with Thames Water, as happened with a lot of the utilities that were privatized, is that what economists call natural monopolies were just handed over from the public sector to the private sector without enough thought given to how these companies were to be operated and importantly regulated in the private sector. And one of the many things that went wrong was something that we call regulatory capture. Now, you've seen this in many different regards, actually. The great Irish financial crisis as part of the global financial crisis of 15 years ago, regulatory capture, the way in which the incumbents, the banks, ran rings around the regulator, yes, is a feature of our times. And so it has proven with the water utilities. It's a caricatured picture, but one that contains a lot of truth, is that what essentially happened is that the Thames Water was privatized with very little to no debt and is now drowning in debt. And the owners of that company, which have been many and varied, some owners of Thames Water and of many of these companies have come and gone. They've raped and pillaged these companies in many financial, yes, ways, and taken out lots and lots of cash, partly as a consequence of loading the companies with debt. It's not quite that they load the debt and then take the money themselves, but it comes very often close to that. And the last thing that these companies actually do is invest in the way that they should in Britain's sewerage and water infrastructure. And yes, they're in a lot of trouble. And they're asking now for, between now and the end of the decade, 40% in real terms, not just in nominal terms. So they want 40% above the rate of inflation increase in water charges in order to be able to start what they should have started decades ago, investing properly in Britain's, in the southeast of England's water infrastructure.
Yes, and I mean, another national institution in Britain, really, the railways were also privatized by Margaret Thatcher. They don't work very well either, and they're very profitable for the people who run them. The point I want to get to with you, Chris, before we talk about the present crisis the Tories, and indeed Britain itself, is suffering, is that before Thatcher, the Labour Party had a good run. The inefficiency and greed of the trade union movement, the liberties they took with people when, for example, grave diggers went on strike. It's a moment in the 70s, which I was living there, and it was a very striking moment. But the destruction of the Times newspaper group, which was saved by Rupert Murdoch, but the Canadian owner of the Times was sunk by corrupt trade unions. So Margaret Thatcher came promising to do away with, to make the state smaller, to give the people the right to own and run utilities and other things. It's just historically, we never live in a perfect world, but what Britain is experiencing now, you can trace back to an attempt to stop corruption and bullying from the left, and you end up with even worse corruption and more bullying with entrepreneurs on the right.
Yeah, I think you're right to look at the Thatcherite reforms and indeed blame some of them for the mess that we're in now. I think the story runs a lot deeper than that. I think that contains, yeah, more than a kernel of truth. I think you need to be an economic historian and go back a long time before 1979, actually, to, yes, trace the roots of Britain's current problems, because they do run very deep and they do run very, very structural. Thatcher had the right idea in that she knew, we all knew back in 1979 that the country needed deep reforms.
Yes.
We agreed and disagreed about what those reforms actually were in terms of what was needed. In some ways, a social historian would go back and say that Britain really never got over the loss of empire and never reformed itself properly. Yes. It was a country set up for ruling its empire and then lost its empire and never quite got over it. That's but one aspect of it.
Yeah, well, there is a saying that Britain lost an empire and had never found a role.
Yeah, that's the cliche. And so I think that one of the key aspects of what Thatcher, and as I say, many of us discerned at the time in 1979, those of us that were around then, was that we knew that the country needed deep reforms. And that has a resonance today, Eamon.
Yes.
Because a lot of what Thatcher did didn't work. We've talked about the water utilities. The railways are another emblem, if you like, of
yes.
or metaphor of what has gone wrong. I mean, I could tell you myself. I mean, I as a former Welshman, it's where I grew up. I still travel quite a lot between London and Wales for all sorts of social and business reasons. And it used to be the case that I could plan on a particular train to arrive at a particular place at a particular time for a meeting or a social event. Yes. I can't do that anymore. I just simply cannot do it. I have to plan to arrive much, much further in advance, sometimes the day before, in order to be sure of honoring whatever commitment that I've got. The second thing I'd mention is something that the flagship BBC radio program in the mornings, the Today Show, ran something from a Northern Railway terminus. It was last year, actually, in which Nick Robinson, the presenter, was looking at the destination board and at all of the delayed trains and made a very simple but very compelling point. He said, the statistics tell us that the British railway system is now more inefficient in terms of timeliness and reliability than is Ukraine's.
Yes.
And if you think about what's going on there, that's quite a statement. So it's another, you know, we've got the River Thames, the ordure floating around in that as one metaphor. We've got the state of the railways as another. There is a whole long list of things in which, I mean, the article with the heading Britain doesn't work anymore is being written yes. on a daily basis in all sorts of different media at the moment. And is, you know, the dinner party conversation these days, to the extent that anybody can afford a dinner party, given the cost of living crisis, is not house prices, you know, which would have been the one of many years ago. It's everybody's asking why nothing works anymore. And something yes. very, very badly has gone wrong. And that speaks to another moment in history. You mentioned, you hinted at that this is a seminal moment, if you
yes,
like, in history for Britain.
Yes, I believe it is.
And like 1979, there's a deep feeling, belief, grounded in empirical reality, I think, that the country is once again in need of deep, deep reforms. And that's one of the reasons why we think, according to the opinion polls, about to turf the Conservative Party out. But one of the reasons why many of us have doubts about the Labour Party, who've got that opinion poll lead, is that there is no sense whatsoever that we're getting no. from Keir Starmer and co. that they share this belief that the country is in need of deep, deep reforms.
Yes, and the question of this coming election, Chris, that the Tories, obviously, the Labour hold a 20-point lead in the opinion polls. Now, there's this Reform Party, which is Nigel Farage is its president, and a fellow called Richard Tice, who's a former UKIP and Brexit friend of Farage's. They're polling around 12%, which is actually more than the Lib Dems. And it's half, or maybe slightly more than half, of what the Tories, they are coming from the right. So they are a threat to the Tories. How seriously should they be taken? And even if they don't win the seats, they certainly have the potential to take a lot of votes from Tories in seats that will allow either the Lib Dems or Labour to win those seats where they spoil the Tories' chances. Do you place any importance on the emergence of reform?
Definitely. One of the things that's been happening to the polls for the Reform Party is that if you look at the various ways in which we track these things, they flatlined in mid to high single digits for most of 2023. And back in the autumn of last year, something started to happen, which was, if you look at the graph of their opinion poll results, it's been tracking up ever since
yes.
October, November of last year. And if you look at sort of poll of polls type numbers, as you say, they're at about 12%. The FT has them exactly at 11.8 at the moment.
Yes.
The most recent poll, a single poll, and that's why we do poll of polls in order to try and get these trends rather than rely too much on one very unreliable single poll. There has been the most recent opinion poll, put them at 15%. So it looks as if that trend of them gently going up each time we get a new poll is continuing. And once you get into the mid-teens with this party, then you start to really, really worry as an incumbent Conservative MP, because they have the capacity at that sort of number, or perhaps a little bit higher, to make the situation for the Conservatives even worse than it is. Because as you say, the gap between Labour and Conservative is now 20 percentage points. I remember when in 2019, at the last general election, the common belief amongst pollsters and political anoraks like myself was that such was the lead that the Conservatives got in that election. You remember the 85-seat majority that Boris Johnson got. The common belief at that time is that was just too big a gap for any Labour Party to close, let alone to get a lead. And here we are, nearly 5 years later, and they have done it. They have done what everybody said that they couldn't do. So we've got, in today's Financial Times, for example, a very, very good data-based piece on, is there any chance at all of Sunak turning it around? And the short answer is no. But again, we mustn't be too definitive, because some of the beliefs, as I've just mentioned, that we've had in the past have turned out not to be true. But one of the strategies that they are going to have, the Conservatives, for trying to, if not actually close their gap with everybody else, is that they are going to try and squeeze the Reform Party. What they are part of, it's becoming clear what the Conservatives are up to in terms of their strategy for between now and the general election. And it's something that British political parties generally, not just the Tories, are very good at. They're very good at squeezing the smaller parties, in particular the Lib Dems and now the Reform Party, by essentially hammering away at people who are saying they're going to vote for reform, this 12%, maybe even 15%, by telling people that it's a wasted vote. And that's something that they're going to do. The other plank, if you like, in the Conservative Party's strategy, which has emerged relatively recently, is that if you vote for Labour, you're going to get a crime-ridden dystopian hellhole of a country.
which you're living in one anyway.
which, if you think about it, is a bit rich for the country that has been in power for the last 14 years. But you've got, in Ireland, you've got a party that tries to paint your country as a dystopian hellhole, and that Sinn Féin continuously tries to paint Ireland in a very negative light. But they're not the incumbent party, of course.
Yes, and the question in the case of the Tory party, and why I raise it with you in the context of Thatcherism and her glorious time, is that some people have suggested that the Tory party is in danger now of terminal decline. If it returned with 100 seats, it really would have a problem, because that cannot be overturned. I mean, Boris Johnson won 89, a majority of 89 or 90, but Labour would have a majority of almost 300. So are we, do you think, looking at a scenario where having taken Britain out of Europe to nobody's advantage and allowed the likes of Farage and Richard Tice and other right-wing types to eat their lunch, they might just not always be a Tory party? I know it's hard to imagine, but I'm sure you debunked that, and I'm sure you're right. Tell me why there will always be a Tory party, Chris.
Well, as you know, historically, they have been the party that has been par excellence at winning elections, and they're going through one of their periods where they are not being true to their own history. There will be a dynamic after the election, assuming that these opinion polls are right, in which, of course, there will be a leadership election in which the Tory party will have to decide whether it's going to stay as it is, which is a complete mess, whether it's going to return to one nation Toryism, that strain of the Conservative Party that has been very successful at winning elections. And that part of the party is the bit that is really not terribly ideological. You could argue that, ironically, perhaps Boris Johnson, prior to him becoming prime minister, was the epitome of one nation Toryism, is that, you know, you can have any idea, any policy you like, provided it's one that gets us elected, and that they don't actually have deep ideological beliefs other than perhaps, you know, the small state, low tax thing.
But many of those one nation Tories have left the party, Chris. I can think of half a dozen now off the top of my head. They've actually left the Tory party and left politics.
So that's absolutely right. So the betting is that somebody like Suella Braverman, if she keeps her seat, this is one of the big questions around these opinion polls now, is that a lot of the big beasts, such as they are, and that's one of the problems the Tory party faces, that it doesn't really have the intellectual
including Sunak, who's in an ultra-safe seat.
Sunak's lead is thought to be down to about 2 to 3%, which is now in the margin of error, which means that his seat has been, on the opinion polls has become marginal, which is, if you think about it, extraordinary, because as you say, it was an ultra-safe seat. The only leader, the only member of the cabinet that is thought to be a shoo-in for re-election at the constituency level is Kemi Badenoch. And yes. So almost by default, she has been spoken about as a potential leader. And she is part of this new right-wing bit of the Tory party. Believe it or not, Eamon, there is serious talk that Priti Patel is going to make a comeback. You will remember her, no doubt.
I will indeed. She's in the Lords, isn't she?
Yeah, but there's all sorts of, she's Dame Priti Patel, but she's been spoken about as of another potential leader,
indeed.
Given this is how febrile things are. Just as Lord Cameron is in the cabinet, there's nothing that prevents, at least I don't think there's anything.
I saw Lord Cameron this morning, and I must say, the less you see of him, the more statesman-like he appears.
Indeed.
And compared to some of the Tories that are out there now, I mean, he's positively Churchillian.
Well, he does retain something of an aura of sort of a semi-intellectual heavyweight, but I think that's as much a function of the competition he faces as a statement about his own abilities. But this dynamic of the Tory party's post-election traumas about them, quite likely the betting is at the moment they will lurch to the right, and that will perhaps take them further into unelectable territory. But the other part of the post-election thing that will affect the Tory party and the rest of us will be what actually the new government does. And on the current set of policies that we think that they are likely to implement, they're not going to do anything that comes anywhere close to this deep structural reform of the British state, the British economy, British society, that is absolutely necessary. That very quickly, I think that we are going to, unless they implement all sorts of things that they haven't told us about, which of course is always possible, we're going to get very tired very quickly of the new Labour government. And I think that will impact on what the Tory party does and the direction in which it goes. But I think the post-election, we think things are unstable now. I cannot see that situation reversing, things calming down, things getting better post-election. I think that we're in for we are in torrid times, and I do not see them ending.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Can I ask you then, as an economist, Chris, and you're ideally positioned to give us the real answer here, will the Labour Party take over a country that's broke, that will be impossible to fix the economics of it? The National Health Service, for example, their defence budget, for example, their welfare budgets. Can it be that Keir Starmer will take over a country that is absolutely broke, thanks to Liz Truss and all the other madnesses that are going on, and there's nothing you can do as the government of the day?
That's too defeatist. We're not broke, but we do face very, very tough fiscal constraints. The new government, whoever it is, if Sunak stages the comeback of all comebacks, if, as is more likely, Keir Starmer is prime minister, the new government is going to have to both borrow and tax more. I mean, that is, as an economist, as certain a thing as you can say. And neither party, no party of any description, of any colour, is admitting to that. And that's one of the problems, is that all of the things that we know have to happen aren't being talked about. All of the things that matter in Britain. You talked about the NHS. The NHS, we know with certainty, needs both money and reform. One of the things that is hard for people to get their heads around in the country is that there are now more doctors and nurses, a lot more doctors and nurses working in the NHS than before the pandemic. And yet health outcomes in terms of life expectancy, queues at A&E, cancer waiting list times, they're all going the wrong way. And that speaks to the need for both reform and money. And that's what goes to the NHS goes for so many other things as well. It will not be simply the case that you will tax and spend more in order to get the economy going. You've got to get the bits of the economy that aren't working for structural, non-monetary reasons in better shape. And that means tackling things like working practices in the NHS, tackling the ownership structure and the regulatory structure of the water companies and other utilities, the way the civil service works, confronting the fact that they're going to have to spend more on defence. These problems are going to be, I think, almost overwhelming for any incumbent government. They're not impossible to deal with. The task facing any new government is going to be Herculean, but it's being made much worse because all of the issues that I mention are simply not being talked about. All of the things that matter are not being talked about, and all of the things that don't matter are being talked about. If Sunak managed to find a policy that stopped the small boats, for example, it would make no difference to the immigration statistics, hardly at all. All of the things that don't matter are the ones that are currently occupying politicians. And the other elephant in the room, the one thing that you and I used to talk about a lot, and we don't talk about it anymore because nobody talks about it. It's one of the biggest things that matters, that is impacting on the British economy and British society, that has zero attention from politicians, and that's the consequences of Brexit. Those consequences are large. They're not catastrophic, but they're adding to all of these other problems. And until you say that, until you face up to your problems, you're not, any therapist will tell you, the first thing that you've got to do with a problem is acknowledge it, and then you can start thinking about how to deal with it. Nobody in Britain acknowledges that Brexit and its consequences are a big problem. It has had big negative consequences for the economy. As I say, not catastrophic. Project Fear was wrong in that regard. But nevertheless, we think that somewhere between 3 to 5% of GDP has already been knocked off the British economy. Those are dry statistics that may not mean much to non-economists, but to an economist, they are massive. That's one of the reasons why we don't have money to spend on the public services that we so badly need. And until you say, yes, Brexit has been a problem, the water utilities are a huge problem, the post office is a problem that we've never dealt with, and the list goes on and on, until you actually fess up to these problems, you're not going to be able to deal with them. And we have this really weird zeitgeist in Britain at the moment that the one thing that we don't talk about or acknowledge are the problems that we face.
A final question, Chris. You sketched out there a scenario post a general election where Labour are in power and are having to make very difficult decisions. At that point, and I've seen this before in my lifetime, the Tory press kicks in. And I won't name the papers, but you know the ones, everyone listening to this will know the Tory press. They will kick in, and some of it is vicious. And they'll be on the Labour government's case every day of the week, 8 days a week.
Yeah, they still carry, despite their much lower circulation than in our past, I mean, they still carry huge weight in this country.
Yes.
And it's going to be a real, real headwind for Keir Starmer. They already are. And
yes,
they are. Once it becomes apparent that Labour's problems are overwhelming, the country's problems facing Labour are overwhelming, I think the viciousness will just go off the scale, and it will remain. There is no solution to this particular problem.
No.
I mean, how do you solve the problem that is the British media? It's been as it is for decades, and it's going to continue to be that way.
Okay, Chris, you leave us on a sorry note, and we're very grateful to you for that analysis of what's happening to our nearest neighbour. We're very grateful to Chris, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsitis.
I'm Kayla Tsinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.